Blog Talk Radio.
This is No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor. We are on the air. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, hey. I'm excited, man. This is the place to be on a nice Friday evening, 7 o'clock at night. Let's get it going.
All right. Just want to mention first and foremost before I start, our sponsor is Trinity Web Solutions. It's a company that I work with and use for clients for websites and things like that. So please go over and check them out, trinitywebsolutions.org, and check them out. Everything else right now, I do want to mention one thing. I want to say congratulations to the Beltway Bombers, who I am assistant coach. We won the 2012 ACPBL Championship about 2 weeks ago in Hartford, Connecticut.
Way to go, coach.
We defeated the Delaware Destroyers. We had a great season, great unselfish players that really like each other. Special shout-out to Hugh Jones, local D.C. guy, a.k.a. Baby Shaq. People know him from N1, may know him from N1. And one special thing, he was kind of, I don't want to say it. No, you know what, this is no chaser. He was actually cheated out of the MVP. He should have been back-to-back MVP, but he was cheated out of that. But I want to also mention that he was voted if you look at USA Basket, the 2011-2012 All United States Awards, voted on by all USA sports reporters. He was named one of the top 15 players not in the NBA, and most of that list consists of overseas players and NBDL players. Why
really?
He's not in the NBA, I do not know. Yes, he is one of the top 15. He made 13, and he's on there. And most of, like I said, and if you see it on ACPBL, on USBasket.com, you will see that most of the guys on there are NBDL players. So congratulations to Hugh Jones. We want you guys to reach out to us. I have a Facebook that's called No Chaser with Mac Williams on Facebook. Please join the page. Come by and check us out. We also have Twitter, which is No Chaser Mac. And my Facebook is also Mac Williams, and the same on Twitter. Please come and join us and join in. Please call us here. Our number here to join is 347-637-3220. You can hit the 1 once we start on our topics. And please join in and sound off. We just got breaking news, Jerry. Andre Berto just tested positive for steroids, and he was supposed to fight Victor Ortiz on June 23rd. Another juicer. We're going to get to back to that in a minute, but what I really want to get to tonight is this whole thing about, LeBron. I anybody who knows me, especially our listeners, know that, I'm very hard on LeBron. I am. Let me first state before why my position is what it is. My position is you can't be the best player on the planet and not be a closer and not be clutch. I don't know how you feel about it, but I grew up watching guys who were Hall of Famers. It's filled with closers and clutch people. You can go back through their film and find their clutch moments. This guy, just at the moments, he fails, I don't know what else to say. The guy just, in the moments when he can do it, he just doesn't do it.
Well, I had talked about this last night on a previous show, and I've been talking about this for the last few years, at least, about LeBron. I call him the Queen of Hearts because, in my opinion, he has no heart. Come crunch time, I totally agree with what you feel, my brother. And if you're a big-time player, if you consider yourself to be a big-time player, ready for prime-time type of player, labeling yourself the king, well, the king always wants to take the last shot, always wants to be the man when it counts the most, and that's crunch time. When your team needs you to take that last shot, to make the last shot, and LeBron, he runs from it. You see everybody but LeBron taking that shot because he passes it off. I had said on a show yesterday, Mac, I don't know if you saw this, and I had heard it on ESPN from Tim Legler. He says he's never seen a player, not this last game, but the game before last, that LeBron was stood up at the foul line late in the game. He took his first foul shot and missed it. When he missed it, he turned to his bench and with his arms stretched out to both sides, and shrugged his shoulders like he was looking for support from his teammates on the bench. Now, what prime time player would do that? Most of them would just, if they missed the first shot, they'd be standing looking at the basket, just waiting for, give me the ball back because I need to take my next shot to make this so we can do what we need to do to win this game. Not looking for some support, looking for a shoulder to cry on. And that's what, to me, is the type of player I see as LeBron or Sherbron, as I like to call him. And like I said on your Facebook page last night, Queen of Hearts.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, for me, I'm a child of the 70s, and I've seen players. You can go back through and let me define for those who don't know or think that when I say big moments, I'm talking about when the lead is in, when the win is in doubt, you're not up or maybe you're down. When it comes to finishing, I'm talking about the big moments. I'm talking about the moments. If you notice, when they look back at Michael Jordan's career, what do they show? The hit against Cleveland with Craig Ehlers. They show the way he won the championship, willed his way to win the championship when they were down against Utah when he had the flu. They made a Gatorade commercial out of it. My thing is, you can't, to me, that is a key ingredient in anybody, is to close and want the ball. I've seen clips of Isaiah Thomas when they're down and he say, give me the ball, I'm gonna make it, or we just won't go any further. Star players, don't want to take the last shot. They do. They demand it. I heard somebody on, I can't remember who it was, but somebody was on ESPN 980 a few days ago, and I can't remember if it was Doc Walker or somebody said they heard Pippen get pissed off because, the coach used to be coach of the Lakers, what's his name, the Zen master?
Phil Jackson?
Right, Phil Jackson was going to run a play for somebody else, and Pippen got incensed because he didn't want the play run. He said, no, I'm going to run the play. I'm going to do it. See, people in big moments are going to want to take that shot. They're going to want to be the guy who put their team on it. They relish it. They embrace it. LeBron has never embraced it or anything. The only time LeBron has hit shot or hit things or shot or made shots or done things is when the pressure, when the win is all secure, or when he already knows they're up and it's over, or to bring them back. But he never finishes. I've seen the guy bring the team back from 9 points, hit 9 points, 10 points, what have you. But in the end, when it comes to finishing, he doesn't do it. And the other night was a perfect example. Not last night, but the other night. Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny Smith, even Barkley changed his tune, but they actually showed it on film where he could have taken that himself. And, Shaquille O'Neal brought a very good point. He said, when the play is broken, what is the rule? He said, what's the rule, Charles? You go for what you know. And when they showed it on film, he could have taken his man off the dribble to the left or to the right. Of course, Barkley used the excuse that, Dwayne Wade came down and got in the way. So what? Shaquille said he should have put his head down and went to the basket. But anyway, I digress. If anybody wants to call in and sound off about LeBron, please, they hit the one. Come on in the queue. We'll take your calls.
Just just by chance, we do have a caller here, and I'm going to bring him in right now, Mac.
All right.
Caller from the 240, welcome to the No Chaser. You talking to Mac and Jerry? What's your name and state what you got to say?
Well, I want to start by saying congratulations, Coach Mac. This is Coach Chaz of the Bellway Bombers. Just want to acknowledge you, brother. You're going to do a great job. You're intelligent. You're articulate. You are opinionated. And you know a lot about a lot. So I wanted to call and just say congrats on a great season and a championship.
Yep.
And just wanted to wish you well, brother.
Oh, thank you, Coach Chaz. This is Coach Chaz of the Beltway Bombers, the architect of the championship. It was a pleasure, and it was great coaching with him. I look forward to next year. It was a hard season. We went through a lot, and I just want to say thanks, Chaz. I appreciate it. You don't have anything to say or want to join in? I'd love to hear from a coach's standpoint about LeBron. I'd love to hear it.
Well, here are my thoughts with LeBron, okay?
Okay.
Treat it as if, and the best analogy I can give is this year with Hugh Baby Shaq Jones. Every game and every team that we played against, their mission, their goal was somehow, some way to stop Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
They adjusted their defense accordingly. They rotated their defense accordingly. And what it is that every night he has to perform at a high level and not only go against a player but go against basically a team to produce.
Mm-hmm.
The same way it is with LeBron. You know, he's easily in the top three best players in the league. And every time you play in the Heat, you're going to have to adjust your defense accordingly. The mark of a true pro is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So game in, game out, you know, you have to marvel at his production. Now, challenge going around, and I understand your frustration with him, is when it comes down to big games, fourth quarters, playoff games, is that he disappears. He doesn't produce. I'm not disagreeing with you on that, but I think what is not talked about is defenses key on him a bit more, and to his credit, he's not forcing the issue when other known stars may take a shot or force a shot at that point. So he's looking to defer to his teammates at that point. Should he be more aggressive? I think so. I definitely think he should be more aggressive, especially if he's at an elite level. But keep in mind that defenses are getting paid a lot of money to prevent him from scoring as well. But I mean, there's not too many coaches or GMs that would not take him as a player, and not too many defensive players want to match up with him at crunch time because he's that talented. But, you know, he's got his hands full now with these remaining playoffs, especially with Bosch down.
But I guess here's my counterpoint to you. I guess my counterpoint to you is this. For one, I have to say this because otherwise people will think that that's true. I'm not frustrated with him. I guess here's my problem. My problem is that I just don't like the idea. People argue with me on Facebook. People go back and forth with me about how great a player he is. I'm okay with you saying he's now. Is he talented? Is he a great player? Is he a guy we haven't seen in a lot of years? Absolutely. But for me, it's just hard for me, you know, coming up with seeing the players that I've seen, not only in the NBA but in other sports, who to me, Chaz, who have come up and I've seen them embrace and embellish the moments. Not saying that a closer or a clutch player has to hit the shot or is always going to hit the shot. They're going to miss. To attempt it. My problem with LeBron is, yes, you can say he defers to his teammates, but how long do you defer to them? And there have been opportunities on film where guys who are not just analysts but NBA guys who have said, I would have taken that shot. Example, the other night, the last shot.
Right.
He had a guy at the top of the key, and Shaquille O'Neal showed where he could have went left or right around the guy,
right.
And instead he passed it off to Dwayne Wade, who wasn't having exactly a stellar night. My problem is, and here's my message to everybody, is this: I can't call a guy the best player on the planet. I can't call you better than Kobe. I can't call you the greatest player ever when you're missing, to me, the number one ingredient that's intangible in your game, and that is at the end of the game, I embrace it, I want it, I'm taking my team on my back, and win, lose, draw, make mistakes, whatever, I'm going to take the weight and I'm going to attempt those shots and I'm going to do it for myself. You can't have the chosen ones, you know, tattooed on your back and then promise 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 championships, and then in the moments that every Hall of Famer, every great player that we talk about, when we look through the annals of history, Hall of Fames are filled with guys who, when we look back at their history, what we remember most about them is those moments when the chips were down, when things were in doubt and things were bad, and that guy embellished it, he embraced it, and said, I want the ball. I want that throw. I want that touchdown. I want to make that big tackle. The great ones do that. So is he a great player? Yes. Will he end up being probably one of the greats? Absolutely. But don't tell me, but stop selling me, not you, but I tell other guys, stop selling me on the idea that he's the greatest player or the best player on the planet when I see what Kobe Bryant does every night. Yeah, he's had a bad couple of nights too, but the fact of the matter is his reputation, Kobe's reputation has never been in doubt. He's always been clutch, a closer. He's always been known as that. So that's what I'm saying with LeBron. LeBron's legacy right now, his rep is not of a closer. His whole thing is he's a great guy in the second first to third quarter, but when it comes to the fourth quarter, he folds. He defers to somebody else. Michael Jordan don't defer. George Gervin didn't defer.
Agree with you 100% on everything you said. I'm a firm believer that if you want to be a star, you got to give me a star effort. And
right.
And what happens now, and you asked initially what was my position from a coach's standpoint. In the fourth quarter in the playoffs, the games tighten, situations tighten. I think you have to impose your will. You know, we talk about Shaq all the time, about how tough a matchup and a tough cover he is because, you know, he's too big for guards and swings, and he's too fast for any kind of up-front players. LeBron is similar. He's much too fast for any kind of bigs to guard him, and he's too strong for guards and swings to guard him.
Right.
He has to now power that. He has to be a beast in the fourth quarter, and at the very least, put a...
Hello?
Hello?
Did we lose him?
Circumstances that I've seen LeBron do that, and one that comes to mind was against Detroit when he was with Cleveland. So something that's kind of curious that no one's discussing is do you feel that since he went to Miami, when he was in Cleveland, he was the man surrounded by role players. So he was the guy that had to be the go-to guy, and he rushed it. Since he came to Miami and he's with Bosh and Wade, it's almost as if he knows he has other guys that he can turn to close. So either he's deferring to them or at the very least he's unselfishly passing to them and maybe not taking over that moment. So I don't know what it is, but they're losing basketball games that they shouldn't lose because of that. And there was a statement by Wade recently, I think this week, that he said that he – just kind of accepted the fact that he's deferring to LeBron as the go-to guy, that this is LeBron's team. He's deferring to him as the go-to guy. And if you have that number one guy who's won a chip deferring to you, you have to accept that role and accordingly, and he's not.
Absolutely. And like I said, the one point I do want to make is that I agree with you. I've always talked about the fact that when he was in Cleveland, the thing that bothered me is that everybody said, you know, LeBron had this horrible team in Cleveland, and I disagree with that. Because if you remember, and I know you might remember this, and maybe Jerry will remember, but I remember it took the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys 5 years to get past Boston.
Right.
And each year we made a change. You adjusted. You got a new player. You trade one out. You get another one. You change things up, and you come back and you keep going. Well, these guys didn't even have a chance. But to me, to make the playoffs the years he did make it and get to the finals once in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken, and even the last year they were in the playoffs, my thing was, why did you have to go to Miami? Now, I mean, that's his choice. I don't begrudge that. But right. that kind of threw me for a little bit. Like, dude, like, all you need is like one or two players, and you're there. When we got past the Celtics, was when we traded when we got Aguirre and traded what's his name? What's the guy's name? Dantley. That was when we got past it. We made that one trade that got us over. In 2004, what was the one we did? We kept making it. We couldn't get it there, but as soon as we got Rasheed Wallace, boom, we got there. So Cleveland never had really a chance to me or really went out. They did a lot to make them better, but didn't. But the last point I want to make is this, is that to me, I'm not surprised by what we're seeing now. Because if you think about it, what was he accused of the last game, his last playoff game in Cleveland? What was he accused of that last game?
I think it went so far as to saying that he either quit or tanked or gave the perception
exactly.
of not playing with
right.
passion. I just think that from a coaching standpoint and doing it for so long that maybe the situation is not as bad as people accuse and perceive, and then maybe again it requires some scrutiny to it. He's just one of those iconic figures that until he wins a chip and is very
instrumental,
yeah,
right.
until he wins a championship mm-hmm. and plays huge and is productive in winning a chip, that won't be removed from him. But, you know, the ironic part about it is I just think a lot of this was brought on by him
mm-hmm.
when he did a whole big production
yes.
announcement. And then on top of that, once he got signed with him and Bosch and Wade with
exactly.
that whole show and the theatrics,
exactly.
I think what that did is brought so much negative attention to them that even if they win it, it's like, all right, well, you're supposed to. So,
right.
you know what I mean? So it's so much
he's
pressure
in a no,
on
he's
him.
In a no, he's in a no-win situation, Chad.
Exactly.
I mean,
so the best
because,
thing he can do now
yeah.
is now is that time. Bosch is down, okay? You got what? They played so poorly yesterday. I mean, it was
oh,
the
yeah.
first time I saw them play, especially Wade, without energy. And here's something that's so funny. Wade played so poorly yesterday and without energy and without passion. And he almost got a pass. I mean, nobody really beat him up in the press. Let that have been LeBron, they would have killed this guy.
Yeah, but you know why I think he got the pass? And I don't have a problem with I don't think he got a pass because he got a lot of criticism today for what he did with Spoelstra blowing up on the bench and being disrespectful. I heard a lot of people talk about that on social media and even in the sports news today. I heard people talk about that and then how bad he played. But I think what it is, the difference is that everybody knows, we've seen it with our eyes. We've seen Dwayne Wade be that great player. We've
right.
seen Dwayne Wade hit those big shots. We've seen Dwayne Wade win a championship and be the MVP and close the games. His reputation
right.
is secure. So we tend to, as sports people, as fans or whatever, we tend to excuse because we understand everybody ain't going to always get the best game every day. Some people are going to have games that they just don't have it. I mean, look at Shaq. Shaq had 10.7 assists in the championship game, but his rest of his team picked him up. It wasn't that he didn't have the effort. He just had an off game. But, you know, and just the last point just to play off you, Chaz, is that That's what I think is so great about Shaq is the fact that defenses gear up every night, and I've seen it, to stop him. And at the end of the night, how many times did we look at the score and go, huh? You had 44 points and 15 rebounds and 10 assists? How the heck did you do that? But that was because he let the game come to him. But in the moments when he knew he had to take over, he did it. And I think LeBron just doesn't have the balance of knowing when and when not to, or he doesn't embrace it. I just want LeBron – my thing is I just want LeBron fans and people to just own up and be honest and just say, look, you know what? Great player. He can't close. He's not as great as he should be. He should be closing and being clutch. That's all I want. I don't care about the rest. Just be honest.
I hear you on
it,
that one.
A lot of fans don't.
If he got very aggressive, showed he wanted the ball down the stretch –
mm-hmm.
And even if he missed shots or missed game-winning shots,
right,
people would be a little bit more sympathetic and understanding, because at some point, every star many times over has missed game-winning shots, game-winning
right,
attempts, or game-tying attempts. At least they embraced wanting that ball and wanting the opportunity to close it. But when you shy away from, I mean, other than the obvious where you're not forcing a shot, I mean, other than the obvious where you have the ability to take your man and go and create something,
mm-hmm,
you got to want that the way a quarterback's got to want the ball
right,
in a minute drive, down
right,
the stretch, to say, ball's
right,
in my hand, we're not running this, I'm making the plays, you know, whether we get, we score or not. So, yeah, I think what he needs to do is get back that perception that you are, you want to be a closer. And then once you get that you want to be the man and you want to be a closer, and even if you don't succeed in close, you have earned the confidence to know that, hey, I'm that guy.
And
I lose the series
to
Indiana. I mean, they better not.
Right.
If they lose the series to Indiana, at the very least, Bosch's stock is going to rise to know that, hey, is this
right,
guy that important
but
to the team?
But to be honest with you, Chaz, if they lose this series, LeBron will get a pass, and he'll be off the hook this year, because the excuse will be Bosch got hurt, Wade was hurt, he didn't play well,
yeah,
and that's it. But what I think you should do is, if I were a LeBron, I would relish this. This is when a superstar steps up and says, you know what, you know what, these two guys are down, this is my chance.
Yeah.
To will us to win. But the problem is, I don't think he's going to do that because I just don't think it's in him to do it. Because the same thing it takes you to do all those four-quarter comebacks and almost get you there, those shots. And here's the thing. If he were aggressive and embraced it and changed his mentality,
right,
yeah, he going to miss a lot, but imagine how many he would hit and how successful he would become.
And again, I don't know how much this is being put on Spoelstra. I mean, what is Spoelstra saying and doing to challenge him? You don't know that. I mean, if I was on that sideline and I have those two scars, I'm going to challenge them to be stars. You know what I mean? What are we doing here? You are two of the best players in the league. I know they're funneling their defense for you. You have scored many times in your whole career with the defense geared to stopping you, and you're still an MVP of the league. So obviously you're putting up numbers against teams every night who are geared to stop you. It's the playoffs. It's a lose and go home.
Yep.
Okay?
Yes,
you are now 2-1 down. You lost home court advantage to Indiana. The crowd is on their side, and you got another game coming up Sunday in Indiana. You need to come out there like a beast and
right,
dominate this game and
right,
carry this team and get
right,
back home court edge. If you don't, we got problems. And it's the same thing. Look, it's the same way it is now with L.A.,
yep.
Paul Gasol and Bynum are playing average.
Right.
We need to be dominating against an Oklahoma City team whose strength is not their front court.
Right.
You know,
right,
if Parker is a shot
leader
and you have Perkins, who is average at best offensively on both ends of the court, they
right,
need, those two guys need to dominate in the paint.
Right.
If they dominate in the paint, it'll free up Kobe, and they're not. But
nope,
then again, Howe and Bynum are not considered the elite of the league. LeBron is. So
right,
I'm hoping at the very least that LeBron, you know, plays at the highest level to put him and his team in the best position to succeed. But, brother, look, I don't want to take up more time than I did. This call is just to say congratulations to what you're doing. I'll be here every step along the way to support you. And I'll
right,
be injecting some thoughts every now and then. Mac, you're going to do great. Okay, so
thank
all
you,
my success and love to you, brother.
Thank you, Coach
Thanks,
Chaz. This is Coach Chaz from the Beltway Bombers, man. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you. And you're welcome to come back anytime, Coach Chaz.
My man,
anytime,
brother. Be well, guys. Take care.
All right. Talk to
all
you
right,
later.
Right. Thanks a lot. All right.
All right.
All right.
Jerry, do we have any other calls?
Yes. We do have someone who just called in from the 301. Let me bring this guy in.
All right.
I call from the 301. Welcome to No Chaser. You're talking to Mac and Jerry. State your name and what you got to say. Call from the 301. Talk to me.
Hello.
is this just a crank call that just wants to hear themselves on the radio, or you got something to say?
Well, this
three,
is that call back.
Two,
call, yeah.
One.
Yeah, call
see
back.
Ya.
See you. That's crazy.
Okay.
All right. We have anybody else?
No, that's it. Hey,
okay.
You know, I wanted to interject, but you guys were having a good conversation. But the one thing that I still won't see from LeBron, I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
He needs to come out as a beast, like the coach was saying. Mm-hmm. I don't think he can sustain that for four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if the game is tight, and I do believe the game is going to be tight because of the loss of Chris Bosh, it seems
mm-hmm.
to be a big loss to the Miami Heat, so it's going to
mm-hmm.
be closer games in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see LeBron taking that step as being give me the ball, give me some space, I'm going to do my thing, I'm going to bring you guys home. I don't see that happening. For some reason, I do not see that LeBron doing that. It's just not his makeup now. I don't understand it. I mean, he's been in the league long enough. He knows it. He knows he's supposed to be the man. I always have to come back to this. How can you name yourself the king, or whoever named you the king,
the chosen
and
one.
Not the chosen one, and not act and be the chosen one?
Yeah, I don't understand that, and I don't know what it is, but my whole mission is just, you know, I just wish LeBron fans would quit making excuses for him, and just, I mean, my thing is just be honest. If the guy's some garbage. I mean, I'm not going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't in the fourth quarter. He doesn't close. I don't understand how that happened. But anyway,
and the fact is he doesn't want to put himself in the position to close. That's the
right.
That's a bigger problem. He doesn't even put himself in a position to close. He doesn't get the ball. Give me the ball. I want to close this game out. He doesn't even put himself in that position. He defers to someone else. Here, you take the weight. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, this is his moment. I mean, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sunday is his moment. If he wants to take it, he can take it and change the whole fortunes and change everything. Here's the thing. I would be willing to give LeBron all the respect he deserves as being the best player on the planet if he would just start closing and attempting, embrace it, demand the ball, get it. Then I'm like, great. But to be honest with you, this is the first player I've ever seen in my lifetime that has had this problem. That's considered a great player. That people say this guy is the greatest or best player on the planet right now. This is this guy. This is the first guy I've ever seen it. And I've been watching basketball since I was a little kid in the 70s. And I've never seen a guy who doesn't demand it, doesn't want it, doesn't embrace it, doesn't see it. I've never seen that before. It's like you have to work with him. It was like, come on, man, you either got it, and I just believe you're either born with it or you're not. You either get it or you don't. I don't think it's something that can be learned. I think it's something that you have to embrace. You know, you have to embrace. So be that as it may, you know, if anybody wants to call in and sound off about LeBron, please go right ahead, call in. In the meantime, I wanted to talk about the Floyd Mayweather fight from last week. Got a lot of flack from that about a lot of people who thought, you know, Floyd is, you know, well, he's lost his, you know, he's lost his skills. He's slowed down. Father Time's catching up with him, this and this and that. And I found that, you know, funny, you know, that in 7 months since he fought Ortiz, now all of a sudden, you know, the guy doesn't have it anymore. And that's what I find interesting. And I actually predicted this, and actually we were in Connecticut the fight night, and I was talking to some of the players, the Bombers, and I was telling them, I said, you know what, to all the haters who don't like him, they're going to, or those who may not want to see him get his behind kicked, they're all going to say, this was a fight, you know, this was a fight that, you know, he lost it, and, you know, he should have got, you know, he got beat up. Now, you know, they're going to make him out now that he's beatable. My take on it, I think I wouldn't put it past Mayweather to play possum with this and take on a tougher fight. I know he took this fight on, but if you notice in that fight, and I don't know if you saw, Jerry, but he was never forced to the ropes. He went to the ropes. He never stood in there and let the guy just hit him because he wanted to, he avoided. You know, you take the chance. And from what I've known is that every fighter, especially the ones who, from Sugar Ray Leonard to other ones who have been constantly done their most of career stick and move and not get hit and not get hit, those guys, as they get older, usually want to prove to themselves that they can stand in there and stand toe-to-toe with somebody and can still win. And I think in the last two fights, Mayweather has proven that he can stand in and fight with bigger, stronger, and a 10-year younger guy than him and still win the fight. Be it controversial or what have you, he got it done. And I just find it funny that in 7 months, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, he's not, you know, he's lost his zing. And I just don't see that happening.
I don't think he lost his zing. And I think he wanted to prove a point.
Right.
He went up against this fighter who has a different style of fight than Mayweather. And he didn't stand toe to toe with him, but I mean he stood up to what he had to give him. He tried to muscle him quite a few times in the fight. Floyd would keep him away with his jabs and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he did take some shots. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And you're going to take some shots because the style of the fight that was taking place, you were going to take some shots, and he was able to withstand the shots that were taken from Mikato.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think he wanted to give a show to the fans. Not saying that he thought this was an easy fight, but I think he, and not saying that he was going to be able to shorten the fight less than the 12 rounds it happened. But I think he just wanted to, I guess, let me put it this way. He wanted to put in the work for 12 rounds. I don't think he wasn't even thinking about having this fight try to be short. He said, I'm going to take this round. We're going to go 12 rounds. I'm going to prove to people and make a statement that I can take this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna beat him. I'm gonna beat him with a 12-round decision. I know I probably can't knock him out, but we're gonna box with his style. It wasn't Floyd's style. Basically, Cotto's style, and he still won the fight.
Well, if you look at the online, I posted it on my Facebook page. That one of the things on the page that I put was his post-fight press conference. And one of the key things that Mayweather said in that press conference was, he said, I decided to make it a fight. He said,
mm-hmm.
I could have stuck and moved and made it a boring fight. He
mm-hmm.
said, but I said, F it. I'm going to go ahead and make it. I'm going to go ahead and give the people their hard-earned, give them a fight, and give them something to see. And that's what he said. And I honestly believe, because if you look at that fight, whenever Mayweather got it in the middle of the ring and wasn't on the ropes, he was killing Cotto. If he had said stick and move and just moved his feet, I mean, he would have won that fight hands down. He probably would have swelled his face up, you know, Cotto's face up worse for 12 rounds, and he would have frustrated Cotto, you know, and that's usually what he does, because, like, you know, even Cotto said at the end of the fight, he's hard to hit. I couldn't hit him all the time, and he's a hard guy to hit. And, you know, so, I mean, I, like I said, I just don't agree with the whole thing about he looked beatable. I mean, even Freddie Roach said it. Pacquiao's guy said, oh, I saw him the other night, he looked beatable. And I'm sitting there thinking in my head going, like, you know what, I wouldn't put it past Floyd Mayweather to play possum, to do something like that just to make somebody think, okay, he's beatable now. And then when we get into a fight with a Pacquiao or somebody else, you know, he starts doing his normal thing and starts dominating the fight and winning. And, you know, we'll be back to the whole, you know, hate thing before. So, but anyway, one of the questions I want to ask, and I just want to put this question out here if we don't have any calls, is, and if anybody wants to call in, that's fine, but with Andre Berto testing positive for steroids, and, you know, this guy has got to be the dumbest guy in the world. He had Victor Conte, the very guy who got convicted of steroids, in his training camp. And
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't make sense. But my question to the listeners is does this verify or make Mayweather's point of when he started this whole thing of the testing, pre-testing before fights and stuff like that to take the test, does it validate his point now? Because, see, when he first started this, everybody thought, oh, this is just a way for him to avoid Pacquiao, which I never thought it was. Because I know one thing, if a guy works in a certain business for 16 years and releases videos saying that there are a lot of dirty fighters in the sport, and that's why I'm starting to do this to protect the sport and protect myself, everybody laughed and thought, oh, you're just avoiding Pacquiao. Now, you think about this. This is the second time in a two-week span that we've had two fighters, Peterson and Berto, who both tested positive for banned substances. So what I want to ask people, and what I'm going to ask, and hopefully those who are listening, is does this verify, you know, Mayweather making the case to have testing before all the way up until fight time? You know, even though they found this, but, you know, does this make him now look like the guy who's trying to avoid Pacquiao? Or now does this make him look like, you know what, maybe he's telling the truth. There are dirty fighters in the sport because we've already seen two now. And
well,
we never heard this many before.
In my opinion, and we had talked about this often, and I'll reiterate it, I think this justifies what he's been saying and justifies the reason. Because there's been whispers that Pacquiao's been doing some certain things too. Not
right.
that I'm not saying
right.
he has, but there's been
right.
whispers that he has. And Mayweather wants to, if he's going to jump in there clean, he wants quite naturally whoever his opponent is going to be on the clean. So, in my opinion, this just justifies what he's been talking about. I never thought he was trying to dodge Pacquiao. I just think he wanted to do what a lot of other fighters that maybe don't have the stature and the weight that Mayweather carries to dictate. If you're going to fight me, you got to take the test all the way up until we get into the ring. Just so that we're straight and there's no funny business going on. So
right, and I think it validates. I really do think it validates because to me it's like somebody being in radio, and telling you know certain people are this way or that way or whatever, just whatever you want to say. You know, when a guy works in, he would release videos. That he would say, you know, Pacquiao, you know, there's a lot of stuff going around about him taking stuff. And, you know, all these other people. And what I found is that, you know, now I'm starting to realize, you know what, he wasn't, not that I doubted it, but I was just like, really? You know, I can't believe somebody would do that. But now it you know, it really is, you know, it's really starting to come true that there are a lot of people out here, you know, using things to get over and to get an advantage or what have you. And I just don't understand it, you know, especially in a day and age where there's a lot of testing, why you would even attempt something like that. I would dare to say, if it were me, I would guess that Andre Berto probably either didn't know he took it and Conte either something in his water or something he was eating or something. I just wouldn't put it past you to have Victor Conte in your camp. I'm like, really? You're going to eat and drink around this guy? You don't know what this guy is putting in your stuff. I mean, that's just crazy. So, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I ask the listeners out there, whoever's listening, you know, call in if you got an opinion on this. But I just want to know, does this validate Mayweather or not? So, next thing I want to talk about is the Saints bounty scandal. The only thing I really want to say about that is I don't feel sorry for Jonathan Vilma. I don't know what your feelings are, Jerry, about that, but, you know, about what's going
well,
on.
Well, I have to differ on this. I think this, in my opinion, was institutionalized. I think the GM, the head coach and the defensive coordinator, they all basically, I think they all basically knew what was going on. They all didn't do anything to basically to stop it. I think the defensive coordinator probably was the one that was running the bounty scam. Jonathan Vilma has vehemently denied that he had anything to do with it, not to say that he did or not. But to suspend the guy for a year, take away his livelihood for a year, is unheard of, especially for a player. I can see it if he's got tested for some type of banned substance, but that's not the case. And now he's gotten a year suspension. Now he's suing the commissioner to try to get his livelihood back, which I think it's going to be falling on deaf ears. I don't think it's going to happen. But
even with the lawsuit, I don't think it's going to happen.
I really don't think he's going to get anywhere. But you never know.
No.
I mean, he's going to federal court. Maybe it'll be a way that because the judicial system works so slowly, he'll have a chance to play this year. Who knows? I mean, this is unheard of. This is uncharted waters that they're going into, and on something like this. For him to take this step is a desperation move, quite naturally. I guess he's got no recourse other than this. So he's going to take a shot and see what happens. So.
All right. Well, the other thing I want to talk about, one of the things I want to talk about here is I wanted to talk about, my feelings about Obama and the political climate that's coming up. And this may be where we butt heads. I don't know. but I'm going to, let me start by saying my political position, and I've told you this off air, and I'll make it clear for everybody else, I am an independent. I don't dislike Obama, let me say that. I don't approve of his policies. I don't have a problem with what he's trying to do, but his policies I don't agree with. So I say that first because most people think when you don't like Obama, there's something wrong with you. But, to me, let me state for the record, the thing that bothers me the most sometimes about my people, let me just say that, is that we tend to think that if someone we judge all our presidents as long as we've had them. They're open to criticism. They're open to not liking their policies, not liked, things that they do we don't like, what have you. Constantly scrutinized and criticized, it comes with the job. But for some reason, the thing that disparages me so much is the fact that with Obama, it's different. Now it's, if you're another skin color and you don't like Obama, you don't agree with his policies, you're racist. And I can't go there on that. My political beliefs go along with my biblical beliefs. I'm a born again Christian, and I'm a principled man, so I believe that I agree with a president's policy based on the Bible. Now, some people may argue and say, oh, the Bible is written by man and all that, that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, whatever anybody believes, if you believe that, that's fine. I'm a principled person. Do I believe in the policies that Obama's doing the way he's going about it? No, I don't. But do I say he's this mean, vindictive person and he's this and this and that? No, I don't. I won't say that about him, because I don't begrudge anybody who's trying to help others or help the less fortunate or what have you. My problem is the way you're going about it. He's going about it, and that's my only problem. But I'll let you voice your opinion on that. But that's the only thing about Obama that I don't like. I like the fact that he's trying to help people, but I don't like the differences in the way they're portraying Republicans and then the way they portray Democrats or him or what have you. So I'll just say that.
Well, I'm a Obama supporter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't approve of all the things that he is doing. But
mm-hmm.
I'm definitely an Obama supporter. I don't support him. I don't make a blanket statement that I support everything
mm-hmm.
he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
and I am a Democrat. I've
mm-hmm.
voted Democrat for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
My heritage, my great grandfather was a Republican. But
mm-hmm.
over the years, quite naturally, and when he was a great-grandfather, quite naturally, way back in the day, the reason a lot of blacks were Republicans because Lincoln freed the slaves. That's
mm-hmm.
how far back. I'm talking about my great grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm a Democrat. I believe in the Democratic way. And the only problem I have, Mac, is this. I should say the only problem. One of the problems I have is there's got to be a separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that in politics, religion has no place in politics. And I think I'm definitely differing with you on that because
mm-hmm.
the fact is the Bible is the Bible, and politics is a different animal altogether. So to be able to, and that's one of the problems I have, and it's a contradiction I have with the Republican Party or
mm-hmm.
some what they call independents, because
mm-hmm.
the fact is most independents or Republicans say they want the government
mm-hmm.
out of our personal lives, but
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, the Republicans or an opposition of the Democratic Party wants to have birth control, wants to have ban gay rights issues and things like that. Now, you can't have it, in my opinion, you can't have it both ways. That's a contradiction,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, because the simple
mm-hmm.
fact is you want to keep the government out of your personal business, out of your bedroom, or out of your everyday life, but then you're trying to put the government to dictate things that are in each and every one of our lives. That's a contradiction in terms.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have it both ways. And
mm-hmm.
I strongly feel about that, and I don't know how you feel about that, but that's one of the things I have a problem with.
Well, let me say this. As far as I disagree with you about let me tell you why. Let me say this. Let me tell you why I disagree. Why I disagree with what you say about religion. And I'll just tell you from my standpoint. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in, now the laws are made, you know, your separation of church and state, that's fine.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in my Bible, and here's the problem. If you're a disciple of something, that's your discipline. That's where you get your answers from, that's what you do. I can't as a Christian say, Jesus be the Lord of my life, and yet say, hey Lord, I don't want you to be the Lord of my politics though. You know, stay out of that. You know, Lord, be the Lord of my money. Hey, but don't be the Lord of my bedroom. I can do what I want. You know, hey, I can't. It doesn't work that way, according to God's word. I'm just going to tell you, I'm stating it from what God's word said.
Mm-hmm.
Lord of all, my thing is, if he's Lord of all or he's Lord of none. And if I live by principles, by God's principles, and I listen to someone who believes something that's not in line with God's principles, I can't go with that. Now let me state this, because I think this is one important thing I need to do. My belief on marriage is between a man and a woman. That's what God says. That's what his word says. That's where I am. That's what I believe. Now, here's the problem. And me and my wife were having this discussion yesterday. And I told her, I said, the problem that I have with some Christians, my own people, brothers and sisters in Christ, is that we say things and we don't really realize what we're saying. We're not complete, or we're not saying it the right way, or we're taking it to the extreme. Let me explain it for you, Jerry, so you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
God says to love everyone. Jesus
right.
said love everyone. Did he not?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Okay, same Bible you read, I read. It says he loves everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It does not say hate anybody. It does not say hate anybody. It doesn't say mistreat anybody. It doesn't say to cuss them out, ban them, throw them out. It doesn't say anything like that. So according to the word, according to the God that I serve, I'm to love everyone, whether you're gay, straight, whatever. It doesn't matter. Because, and the reason why, is because I believe that we're to love everybody, and God loves everybody. God gives everybody a free will. He gives everybody a free will. The Bible says that God gives you a free will. That means you do whatever you want. But whatever your choices are in your life and what you do, you will reap whatever those choices are. It's not up to us as human beings to judge another human being. My job.
I totally agree with that.
Right. My job is to love you. My job is to treat you decent. Now, that does not mean that if you are gay and we work together, I'm not going to mistreat you. I don't have a problem with that. All I care about is you doing your job. And we cool. I don't have no problem. I'm not going to treat you no different. That is not my job. God told me to love you and to treat you with respect, whatever that all entails, grace, mercy, all that. That's fine. But if you come to me and you ask me, Mac, do you like the gay lifestyle? No, I don't. I don't believe in that. But I'm not going to treat you any different because of that. And I think the problem is that Christians think that because God in the Bible calls it an abomination, or because God doesn't like it, or God says it's not supposed to be, and that's not what he created, whatever the Bible says, that's fine. But it's not our job to go around and tell everybody that. I'm just telling you to make it clear that I don't approve of it. But God has to judge you. I don't. That's your choice. Now, if I witness to you or I talk to you about Jesus or what have you and we get into that conversation, that's fine. But it's not my job to come around and hate you or to be anti-gay or anything like that. So let me be clear. I'm not against gay people. If that's your lifestyle, that's your lifestyle. At the end of your life, when you have to go before Jesus or you have to go stand before God and judge for it, we'll find out who's right. You'll find out. You have to deal with your choices. Okay? So, you know, even God says, I put before you death and life. And what does he say? Choose life. So whatever your choices are, you do that. So let me be clear on that. I don't do that. Now, do I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman? Yes, I do. Do I believe that? Do I back or do I approve of the gay lifestyle? No, I don't. But does that mean I don't like gay people? No. Does that mean I hate them? No. Does it mean I'm a homophobe? No. They don't scare me. They just like anybody else. There's good and bad in everybody, no matter what nationality, whatever race, whatever it is, that's fine. My command from my God is to love you and respect you. And that's it. It's not my job to judge you. So I wanted to make that clear. So because I know people who, especially my people, when you take a stand on something, they always accuse you of you hate them. And I don't hate anybody. I can't hate anybody because God won't. Because to be honest with you, God's going to punish me if I do hate you. If I don't forgive you, if I can't tolerate you, you know, God puts it on us like this. If I can tolerate you, why can't you tolerate somebody else? I put up with your shenanigans. I put up with whatever you do, so why can't you do that with somebody else? So to me, I have no problem with them. I've had people that have been gay that I've worked with and been with, and I don't have a problem with them. I mean, they're not like vampires. They grab me and you know, bite me and suck my blood and kill me. I mean, I'm not scared of them. They're just normal people
right.
like anybody else. There's good and bad
right.
in all. So I just
right.
want to make that clear.
Well, the one thing that really bothers me, and when I'm talking about with separation of church and state, is when you make laws like the laws that are being passed in several states in recent years, and other states are being contested, being same-sex marriages, and what I'm talking about for one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I'm talking about is also the right to choose. It seems like and I'll say it like this, the religious right uses that in politics and to a non-Christian type of way, and it that's one of the things I'm talking about. Being if you're such a Christian and you're so into the Bible, why aren't you preaching love thy neighbor rather than hate thy gay or hate thy person who wants the right to choose? That's always bothered me. And it always, in my mind, is a contradiction of your faith for one, and a contradiction of your religion for another. It's maybe you can explain it to me a lot better.
Let me say it to you this way. And I guess the way I explain it is this, is that it's like anything else. If you're a diehard whatever, you're going to believe what you're going to believe. Now, I tell you the difference between me and some people is that I really read the Bible and I pray and I hear from the Lord by reading and praying on my own. Not to say I don't go to church, because I go to church every Sunday and I hear the Lord through my pastor or through my preacher or my teacher. Now, do I believe that, you know, but I don't think, I guess what I'm trying to say is this. Am I for, you know, gay people getting married, same-sex marriage? No, I'm not for it. But I'm not in a position of power to change, to do that. But if I were in a position to change that or to ban that or to vote and say, no, I don't want that, no, I don't want that. And you need to, and let me tell you from a Christian standpoint.
Or is your political views driving that?
No, my religion is driving that, because here's my point. One thing God talks about is God talks about influence and talking about who you hang around with, who your friends are, and things like that. Like, and it talks about influence. Here's my point, and let me just be clear with you. If I have a boy who's grows up with two men being married, tell me, because we're all influenced by who we grow up with, our experiences, that's what forms us, that what develops us, okay? So for me, the thing about it is I don't believe it's right because God says it's not right, and that's who I serve, and that's who I listen to, and I take my I live my life biblically. Am I perfect? No. Do I mess up? Yes, I do. But what I'm saying to you is I'm a principled man, and I live by biblical principles. I try to. I make my mistakes like everybody else, and I'm not perfect. I'm not no glowing, shining example of this. I make my mistakes. But what I'm trying to say is if I believe that, why would I go against God's word and believe something or support something that's not that my God doesn't believe and that I know or I feel is not right? It's never politics. It's never politics with me. My politics, like I told you, are driven by my beliefs. Like for instance, do I believe in welfare? Yes, I do. Do I believe in food stamps? Yes, I do. Do I believe everybody should have it? No. Do I believe that there should be a time limit on how much you get? Yes. Do I believe that someone should have to do something in order to get those things? Do some kind of work or something or somehow sign up or do something to get that stuff and get it absolutely for free? No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I don't. And we all know people who have stayed. There's no excuse. For example, God teaches us to pull up by our own bootstraps. He teaches us to pray and to trust him and to depend and count on him to provide for us and to go out there and do it. I can't sit and say, I want a job, and say, Lord, let me have a job. You know, this is a perfect example. I can't say, Lord, let me have a job, and then sit at home with Fritos and sit on my butt all day. God don't work like that. Faith is an action word. I got to get up off my butt and take the bus or a bike or whatever and go out there and try to find a job and apply for applications and trust that God will provide that job and open that door and believe that. So what I'm trying to say to you is that if I believe that, then why I can't believe something different than that? Then I can't believe that everybody should have food stamps, everybody should get a check, that the government should just give it to everybody who applies for it and not control the fraud and waste that goes on it. Because I think we all do know somebody we know families that have been on food stamps and welfare for decades. It's the family legacy. And that's no excuse for that. And you're telling me that there's no fraud and waste there? Yes, there is. You hear people who go down and get that stuff and the able-bodied men who don't want to work. There's a lot of laziness going on. But if you say that to people, you know what people say? You're horrible. You're mean. You're heartless. You don't want to help nobody. And that's what I mean by the Bible that I read drives my principles. When somebody says they have a plan, I look at that plan and say, is that a good plan? Yeah. Okay. If it's not a good plan, it doesn't line up with what God says in his word, then I'm not going to do it. You know, classic example. The president vilifies the rich. The rich, the rich, the rich. The problem with the rich. And what did I quote to you the other day, Jerry? I told you the other day. What did I tell you? I said, and it's a true stat, I said 70%, and this is what's not reported. I look at MSNBC, I look at CNN, I look at all these other ones, but I look it up on the internet, and I told you. What did I tell you? I said 70% of the top 2%, the millionaires and billionaires in this country, pay 70% of the tax in this country. 47 to 51% don't pay any taxes, and most of that is the middle class. So to get so for a president to come up on, it's disingenuous for a president to come up on TV and tell me that there's that rich people aren't paying their fair share. That's not true. And to vilify rich people, that's wrong. You know why? Because God talks about in the Bible everybody prospering and everybody being wealthy, but it's driven by your choices, what you do and how you do it. That's what it's about. God never vilifies being rich in the Bible. He wants everyone to be rich. Everybody should be wealthy. Everybody who follows God in that Bible is wealthy. Those who don't, who aren't wealthy, or those who aren't doing well, then there's a problem. There's something you're missing, because the Bible that I use promises me that I have wealth. Am I wealthy? No. But am I poor? Am I dragging? Am I walking around saying, I ain't got enough money for this, I ain't got enough money? Am I an adult ditch? No. There are things that I have not done. There's choices that I've made that have put me in a position that I should be in a better position, but that's what it is. So what I'm trying to say to you is that the Bible doesn't talk about taking from the rich and giving to the poor. It talks about people giving freely and giving to the poor, to help the poor. And they do that by taxes, or they give that through their charitable or what have you. So I believe in that. Do I believe that, you know, if you're charging a guy, a rich person, 27 and saying now you got to pay 35 and saying that, you know, these, I don't believe in vilifying those people. I don't. And all the people that stand here and that are backing the president and say, yeah, the rich are this and yeah, the rich are that and the rich are this and that, if they became rich overnight, they wouldn't feel that way. You just feel that. People feel that way because they feel like somehow somebody's gaining an advantage. Yeah, there are loopholes. But if you were rich, you'd want the same loopholes. You want to keep more of your money. Hell, we want to keep more of our money now. We ain't got a lot. We not rich. So I'm saying it's the same principle, but to sit and make enemies out of rich people I think is wrong. To take from the rich and supply everybody else's needs to these other people who some of them aren't working, are able-bodied and are lazy and not doing anything, I think that's the right thing to do. You should require that. I think, hell, I mean, to get something, or get a government program, you got to be required to do something. I mean, you just can't sit at home and just do nothing, and that's the problem with my only problem with the government is that they run programs full of fraud and waste, and then as soon as the Republicans say we want to cut the fraud and cut the waste and tighten the belt, everybody goes, now y'all want to throw out the old, y'all want to kill off the seniors, y'all want to be selfish, y'all want to let everybody drink, you know, dirty water, clean air, you guys are the most horrible people in the world. And that's not how I see it. A budget, we don't even have a budget for this country. We haven't had a budget for this country since he's been president. That's unheard of. And the same president, the Democratic president that we had that everybody liked so much, Clinton, who I will freely say I probably would have voted for and probably regret that I didn't, had a budget. And he left us with a surplus. But yet the president we have is spending all this money and nothing's better. They're telling you it's better, but when you look at the stats aren't telling that. So that's my thing. My whole thing, Jerry, is, you know, I'm not coming at this from, I'm not a political person in the sense that I'm going to stick with somebody just because they are that. You know, just like there are a lot of black people out here who support Obama just because he's black. He could take a crap in the middle of the street and shoot somebody, and they would support it just because he's black. I've heard him tell me, like, mm-hmm. I don't care if he screws it up or not. I don't care. Let the black man have a chance. Really? That's really where you draw. That's crazy.
You know that just like you had said that the, Clinton left us with a surplus, and then we had two terms of a Republican president.
Absolutely.
That ran up the debt for one.
Absolutely.
And also a Republican Congress who's supposed to be supposedly in their mantra frugal was even more spending more money than several Congresses before then. When Bush left office, there was a lot of problems with the economy, and bad things were on the horizon. And when Obama got elected, one of the things he said, and I specifically bring this up to all my friends and all the who are independents or Republicans, he said, "This is not going to be a quick fix. This is going to take a long. This is going to take a while to fix, because the fact is there are so many problems, and so the problems are so deep that it's going to take a while to fix. And I think a lot of people have lost track of what he actually said in his campaign speech. Before he even got elected, he said this is not going to be a short or easy fix. It's going to take years and years to fix. And even after Obama, whether he wins this election or not, I still believe even after his next term or even whoever takes over for him, it's still going to be a problem in the economy because the economy is so screwed up that we're in trouble. And a lot of you just see the national debt ticking up. It's like a ticking time bomb to be short with it, like a ticking time bomb. You see these foreign countries, Greece and a lot of other foreign countries, struggling to survive. We're a world economy. We're all tied in with each other. So when one person, one country starts to falter, it can affect, it can have a trickle down effect to a lot of countries, including ours. So
I agree. Go ahead.
I understand because of the economy. I understand because of a lot of things that haven't gotten fixed yet, that a lot of vultures and a lot of people have come out against Obama because he hasn't, and this is the American way, he hasn't gave him that quick fix like they were expecting. When he told them in the beginning it's not going to be a quick fix, this is going to take a while to fix.
I agree with that, but let me counter that. Yeah, it's not going to be a quick fix, but what we haven't seen is we haven't seen an improvement. That's what we said. But remember this. This is what I want to let you know. For number one, they're still blaming Bush, and that's the problem I have with that. Because at any job, if you went to it, you have a job, I have a job, other people have jobs. We can't go to our job and interview for a job and tell somebody how we're going to fix a problem and how we're going to do that, and then 4 years later or 3.5 years later and still be blaming the guy who was there before because we get fired if our results were bad and we hadn't improved. That's number one. The second point I'll make to you is this. It's not a quick fix. I agree with that, and I understand that, and I don't think anybody's expecting a quick fix. But I think what everybody's expecting is improvement, a vast improvement in a four-year period. And when people come back and say, well, you know, I hear people say, well, the Republicans didn't let us do anything. You know, the Republicans didn't let us do anything. You know, they're blocking everything and that. But then I come back and I say, okay, so what happened the first 2 years when y'all had a Democratic-controlled Congress and you guys were telling the Republicans to shut up, we're going to do what we want to do anyway? I mean, they didn't get anything, nothing improved. They got whatever they wanted to do, and they decided we want to pass this big medical thing. You wanted to pass this Obamacare, and then that didn't work. And then you spent and to me, this is when the economy became Obama's. And I say this with all sincerity, the day this economy became his responsibility, and it was on him, and it wasn't on Bush anymore, when he made a decision to say, I'm going to go ahead and sign $787 billion injected into the economy, and he said, we will not go over 8% unemployment. It will stabilize everything. He gave promises on that. So when you do something like that, $787 billion, that's a lot of cheese. And when you put something in and make promises of what's going to happen and convince the country this is what's going to happen, you got to be held responsible for that. Now the economy is yours because you just put in all that money, and it hasn't done anything to this date. They tell us it has, but there's no way to really prove it, and we're still at what? We're at 8.2. We went to 9% right after we spent all that money. And then to sit and tell somebody that there's no results, somebody's going to be held, needs to be held responsible for that, and he should. And I mean, honestly, Obama should be held responsible for that. So the excuses from Democrats who say, you know, the Republicans stopping us, they won't let us, or what happened in the first 2 years, and then to say, well, he spent $787 billion and nothing's been resolved from that. We still have high unemployment. You know, gas prices are getting a little bit better or what have you. But overall, the economy, Obama spent almost $4 trillion, added $4 trillion to the debt. And then when you come to him, and then when people come to him and say, give us a budget, he goes, no. And then, you know, so to sit and say that, I'm not saying Obama's this evil, bad dude. He's trying. But when you try something, take responsibility for it. You can't shuck it off on the Republicans and say, well, now they're not doing it. Because when y'all had all the cards and all the guys in y'all favor, and y'all was doing stuff around the Republicans, they didn't have enough votes to stop you, you know, this is what you got. This is what the Democrats did. And I just don't like the fact that, you know, they get a bad, you know, Democrats act like, well, we, you know, poor us. And I'm like, you guys had a chance. You had 2 years to do what you needed to do or to try to. Now, do I expect everything to be perfect now? No. I don't think anybody wants it to be fixed, perfect, done. But what we haven't seen is we haven't seen any improvement based on the things that he's passed, the things that the Republicans have passed, the money that they just spent, and the money they keep spending. We're not seeing any results. So at that point, he needs to be held responsible for that. So I'm not saying that where we are today is all his fault. I'm not saying that. I'm not even saying that because I know a whole bunch of presidents before him set us up and put us in this position. But when you come into the door and volunteer for the job, because the last I know, he wasn't stuck up with a gun and forced to do it. When you come in and promise people and say you're going to do something, you got to be held to those words that you have. You got to be, you know. And I don't believe he's a bad guy. I don't. I just think that his policies have failed, and he has to be held responsible. And I just don't like it when people say, you know, you're a racist if you don't like his policies. You're a racist if you say something bad about him or if you criticize him. And I'm saying that's not fair because the 43 presidents before him were criticized just as bad as Obama's getting it now, and it's no different. It's just the difference is he's black and they were white, you know.
Well,
and that's the only problem.
And I'm going to jump right on that subject. Hey, you don't think there's been a more harsh tone taken toward Obama because he happens to be the first black president? You don't think that there's an animosity that's built up among people of a different color resent Obama because you know the old adage, if you are black, you have to be absolutely the very absolute very best. You've got to rise above 10 times fold over someone that may be of a different race than yourself in order
right.
to get the recognition. And then if you screw up, you're going to get scrutinized and lambasted
mm-hmm.
more because you're black versus someone who were a previous president. You don't think that's anything like that's going on?
Do I believe? No. Okay, I'll answer that. Do I believe there are people who have animosity because he's a black man? Absolutely. There's always going to be racists. There's always going to be people who ain't going to like Obama just because he's black. So let me say first and foremost, I ain't stupid. I know there's racism, and there is, and there always will be. As long as there's a devil, there's always going to be racism. So I don't have a problem with that. But I don't. But I'm going to tell you, I think, and this is just me from a black man standpoint. Here's what I think. I honestly think, no chaser, is that the problem is that when Obama got in, there wasn't, I don't think there was animosity with him getting in because, trust me, just because there was a 90% black showed up and voted, they had a lot to do with it, but they didn't have everything to do with it. Because without those independents and without most of those white people who liked him, who wanted him, who was enthralled with him just as much, he wouldn't have got it. But here's the point. I don't think the criticism is any different than anybody else. I just don't. Because I don't hear anybody calling him, I mean, I don't hear anybody saying anything different about him, or even on political shows, I don't hear anybody saying anything different or using different words or anything else, you know, about that. Now, do I think the accusations of being a Muslim, the accusations of not being from this country and all that stuff, yeah, that's going to come from some people who are ignorant or what have you, okay? I understand that. But as far as policy, as far as the criticism he's gotten, it's the same as every other president. It's no different. If your policies don't work, your policies don't work. Carter was horrible. I saw that. He was horrible. But I mean, he got it just as bad as Obama did, and Bush got it as bad. Bush got shoes thrown at him, got called stupid, dumb, ignorant. I mean, I've heard every nasty word in the world about Bush. I mean, this guy's even been accused of, you know, having a plane flying to two buildings. I mean, come on, man, really? And then for people to sit here, it's disingenuous for people to sit here and say, well, you know, the tone is different for Obama. No, it's not. Every president gets scrutinized. Every president gets criticized. Every president gets it I don't hear anything different than the other. Now, are you telling me that there are going to be white people who aren't going to like him because he's black? Absolutely. I'm not going to say that. But to paint the whole people or the Tea Party or anything else that way, I think is wrong. In every group, there's radicals. There's radicals in the Democratic Party. There's radicals on left wing. There's radicals on right wing. There's radicals in the Conservative Party who are over the top with it, who take it too far. So don't think for one moment that I'm trying to say, well, you know, these people are right and they're all right and they're all wrong. There's wrong on both sides. But my thing is, I don't think the tone is any different than any other president before. Trust me, I've been alive since the 60s, so I've seen a lot of presidents, and I haven't seen this guy get anything worse than anybody else. But I'm going to tell you part of the problem, and I've heard this, is that there are white folks, and I've heard this from white folks, white folks that I know, I've heard the conversations, and the private conversations. The problem is that we as black folks sometimes are looking for racism and call things racism that are not racism just because it's coming from a white person. And I have a problem with that because I don't think that's right. And I don't think every white person who disagrees with Obama is a racist, but yet they're called that if you're white and you disagree with that. And I think part of the problem and the exasperation with Obama, telling the honest truth, is the fact that white folks feel that you can't criticize them, you can't talk about them, you can't say anything without black folks getting up in arms, getting pissed off about it, and calling you a racist or calling you things that they know or feel they are not. You start to resent. No, I'm explaining because I believe you. I believe what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But then they start to resent the guy. You kind of get what I'm saying. Now you're starting to resent it because now they see it as, well, dang, we can't, you know, now we can't talk about the guy, we can't do anything. I can't stand this guy. Like, this really makes me sick. So then they start liking the guy because they feel like I can't say anything about him just like I could the other 43 guys. Now I got to be a little bit different. I can't use certain words. I can't say certain phrases. I can't say certain things. I mean, that's just crazy. But that's the reality. And I think that's where sometimes the frustration comes with not liking Obama or people who just don't like him or who don't want him to be president anymore. So
you don't think because he's a black man in the office that he's more highly criticized and he's more critically criticized, I should say, than someone a previous white president.
No,
you don't believe that.
No, because I've heard the same rhetoric for what, all these presidents since what, Nixon, and I haven't heard anything they said any different. That lets me know that they're saying something different about him than they're saying about the other president. I just don't hear it. Unless somebody can show me evidence and say they said this, they never said this about the other 43.
Okay.
Or somebody said these words are different. Because otherwise we're doing the same thing that we accuse the white folks of. We're going into judging people, and we're going into racism by saying, well, because he's white and he doesn't, we don't know a person's heart. We don't know a person's mind. We can only judge it by their actions and your words. But the actions and the words that I have heard is I haven't heard overall nationally. I've heard no one. I'm talking about I'm only judging it now. Now, people, if you're asking me individuals, yeah, there probably are some people out there like that. Have I heard those people? No. Have I heard on national TV and on cable networks and political shows, have I heard them say anything different than they would have said about Bush, his father, or Nixon, or Carter, or Clinton, or anything else? I mean, remember, Clinton cheated. They tried to impeach Clinton. You know, and so what I'm saying is there's nothing. So I'm saying somebody show me where it's different for him than it is for every son. Show me. Show me the different language. Show me the proof. Because I don't see it, because on the political shows, they criticize his policies and talk about it and break it down to the numbers and look at the stuff just like they do with every other president, from the Congressional Budget Office to all these other stuff. So I don't think he's being judged any more harsh than anybody else. When you sit in that seat, you get it, and you're going to get it. Everybody. It don't matter who it is. I don't know anybody who's taking a pass. I don't know anybody who's just out taking a pass. I don't.
Unlike corporations, where they can make a strategic move to change the course of their business, the government, the big massive federal government, is very slow moving in making a turn for whatever way they want to go. It takes years for a government to turn around themselves from whatever direction that they're at, whether it was a good direction like they had with the Clinton years. For the Clinton years, I think that was the longest span, if I'm not mistaken, that the economy was up on the upturn, and now it's turned the other way. After Clinton left office, and now the economy has, I wouldn't say tanked, but took a downturn. And it takes a while, because how big the downturn was, for the economy and for the federal government to help the economy take a turn. It's like a navy ship out to sea. They don't do a 90 turn right away. It takes a while for that turn to take place.
Right.
And I think the federal government. And it'll take years past Obama, whoever takes Obama's spot, if he takes another term, or whoever, Romney, whoever it is, it's going to take a while for the government to take a turn for the better, because of how deep the problems are presently for the government.
I agree with everything you just said. But you have to. But if we're talking about things being straightened out. Here's what I'm saying. I'm not saying things should be fixed. I'm going to use the word, not the word fix, it shouldn't be used. Improvement. Change, improvement, that is what hasn't happened in a matter of almost 4 years. So what I'm saying is it should take, something should improve in 4 years. I mean, I'm not saying it should be fixed. I'm not saying we should be all singing zippity-doo-dah-day and be happy. What I'm saying is something should be improving. We should see something and say, okay, that's getting better. Okay, that's getting better. Okay, that policy is kicked in. That's getting better. What we have now is we have policies that he's put in place that have actually stifled some growth in the economy. And some of the policies that he's made, and then we've seen where he spent all this money and said that the unemployment. I mean, those are things you can't argue with, and you can sit and say, well, you know, it takes a while for unemployment to turn around, but when you say so to someone, I'm going to spend $787 billion, not million, billion dollars, and it's going, and we're not going above 8%, and we're going to, and everything's going to straighten out or bottom out or improve, and it doesn't, that's a problem. You're going to be criticized for that. That's any president. There's no one that's going to spend that kind of money. No president in history has ever spent $787 billion and said, I'm going to put this in and we're going to not go above this or go above that and stuff like that. So my problem is I don't expect, and I don't think most reasonable people expect the economy to be quote-unquote fixed. I think what people wanted to see was what you're doing, what are the results. In 4 years, you should be in the results. The first 2 years, you know, black folks kept saying, give him, you know, he's just started, he's just begun. That's what we heard for the first 2 years. Okay, cool. Now we're into year, you know, year four. You see what I'm saying? Now we're into year four, and things are either, now our economy is worse. We owe more debt than we have. He spent, in fact, Obama has spent more money, added more to the debt than any president in history. So when you have those kind of numbers and those kind of stats, it's hard to turn to somebody and say, well, you know, it's not fixed. We're just talking about improvement. That's where I am. And I've heard most people say they want to be, it hasn't improved. And yet, it's his policy that he signed, that he put in place to do it. So my thing is, yes, did he put us here? Heck no. But where we are in these last 4 years is all him. It's not Bush's fault anymore. Now Bush is out of here. He already did his damage, but when you come in to fix it, you have to show results. You have to show some improvement. And what I'm saying is in those 4 years, he hasn't shown really a lot of improvement. But let me say this for a minute. I got some people. I got one of my guys who are on right now who hit me on Facebook, said he wants to jump in. And if anybody else wants to jump in, let's give them a chance to sound off or say whatever they want to say. We've been dominating the conversation here. I'm sorry, Derek.
Number to call in, 347-637-3220. You want to call in, you want to jump in the conversation, just dial those numbers, and we'll be talking to you.
Anybody in now?
No one is in now. We're talking
about
no chaser, and we don't hold anything back from each other.
Right.
And any caller that calls in. So if you want to call in and voice your opinion on anything that we're talking about or jump in a different way, we'll gladly address whatever you want to say.
Yeah, we can talk whatever you want. You want to talk LeBron, you want to talk anything. I mean, bring it up. We're open. We'll take the conversation wherever it wants to go. So, you know, that's not a problem. So I don't have no problem with that. But, you know, that was, like I said, you know, Jerry, that's my only thing. And like I said, I don't, you know, for me, I just don't think it's, you know, I don't think it was a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. You know, I think it's a great thing. You know, I think he's done what he can, the best he can. But you know, I'm not even saying he did anything bad or he's evil or anything, because I know he's doing whatever he knows to do or whatever he's being advised or told to do. But at the same time, that's why I don't think he's being criticized or more harsh than anybody else, because when you come out in front of the American people and make a decision and say, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and we're going to present this, and this is what's going to happen as a result, and it doesn't happen. You have to. If you're at your job and you tell your boss, and your boss says, do this and do this, you say, okay, boss, if I do this, this is what's going to happen. Your boss is going to hold you to that. He's not going to let you off the hook and say, well, you know what, Jerry? You know, I'm not going to really hold you to that. We're going to be, you know, we're going to be good. So, you know, is somebody in the queue now?
No one's in the queue. I'm not looking at anybody calling
wow.
in here.
Because he's online, keep telling me he's here.
I don't see it. I'm looking at the board right now, and
I don't see it.
Ask him, has he called in? 347-637-3220.
No, he called in. Let me say it again. But he said I just called back. I'm just like, hold on.
Wow. Really? Don't tell me my board.
He said I'll call from a different phone.
Okay. I don't know why. You know, this,
no,
this
don't
is
worry
happen-
about it. No worries.
No,
you're going to call from
no,
a different phone.
No, what I'm saying is this has happened before. Black has called in a couple times and not showed up on the board. So,
okay.
And I've had this happen to me before. So it doesn't surprise me. But it's unfortunate if somebody is trying to call in.
Exactly.
Right.
The only thing I'll say is let me plug our, you know, I would like everybody who's, if you're listening, to join our Twitter page, which is No Chaser Mac, all in one word, all caps, No Chaser Mac on Twitter, and you can follow us there. And as I said, No Chaser, also with Mac Williams on Facebook, please join our page. Please submit any show ideas. Anything you want to talk about for the next week's show or what have you, if you want to talk about that, please, by all means, you know, post it on our page, and we'd be glad to bring up the subject or what have you. But anyway, to continue, you know, to continue this conversation, if there's any more, you know, Jerry, like I said, we agree. I think we don't have a lot of differences or things. I think, you know, I just think personally, we as black folks sometimes are a little bit too sensitive. I think we're a little too sensitive. I think we just think somebody's picking on, you know. We're, no, seriously, because I have never heard. Do you see him in the queue now, Jerry?
No, I don't see anybody. The only thing I can tell you, if he wants to join the conversation, is for you to text me his phone number, and I can call him. And we can go that way.
Okay. If you hear him, text your phone number where you are, Welton. Text that.
No, or, I mean, if you have his phone number, you can text it to me, and I can call him, and we can go from there.
Oh, okay.
Like that. You follow what I'm saying?
Right. I got you. All right, so
because,
anyway,
I'm not seeing it.
Number. I don't know. Yeah, that's what I said. I said, I'm not seeing it. I'm like, what is going on with this? So Blog
yeah,
Talk Radio
yeah.
owe us something. But as I said, I just think we're a little too sensitive because, to be honest with you, I have not, and I say this again, it'll probably piss some people off, but I have not heard this much about race as I have now, especially in politics, especially in these last 4 years. Since Obama became president, and I predicted this when he first got voted in. I told my mother, I said, Mom, I said with Obama getting voted in, everything now will be black and white. I think it will take our race relations back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And she kind of agreed, but then she's kind of like, well, maybe not. I said, no, it will. I said, because everything, the criticism that we give every president, we give him, it's going to be a race thing. It's always going to be a race thing, and that's what's always going to be brought up. And, you know, true to what I said, it's happened. It's a shame, and I hate it. I hate it. So, I mean, I I'm going to be honest with you, Jerry. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I wish it wasn't that way, because I want to see the guy get the same chance as everybody else, and I don't even want it to be a part of the conversation because I'm just sick of it. But
well, the problem I have, and the problem I've always had, is that you and I can be let me put it this way: three of us in a room, you, me, and a white guy. And I nine times out of ten, in my opinion, and I don't know how you think about this, but in my opinion, that white guy, we will be held to a higher standard and be more critical, looked at more critically than a white guy. And I truly believe that.
I haven't found that, honestly, Jerry, to be kind of true with me. I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you and say something. I've probably, and this is just maybe me, and maybe I'm just blessed. I don't know. But I've always seemed to be held, and I've been a manager. I've ran restaurants. I've done all that. And I've tended, and I have honestly tended to be, I've tended to be more judged fairly as anybody else.
Hello, we got the call on the line from the 202. Welcome to the No Chaser Show with Mac and Jerry. Who we got? And talk to me.
Hey, what's going on? This is Weldon. What's going on with Mac? What's going on?
Weldon, how you doing, man? Good to hear you.
How you doing, man? Hey, man.
I'm good.
I would have called earlier, man. I've been doing my graduate school, man. This work got me going crazy, man.
I know. So, hey, enjoy you. You want to join in the conversation, or what you got to talk
just for,
about?
Just for a little bit, man. Just for a little bit. I just wanted to call in. I don't know. You know, I know it was a little issue. I could hear y'all, but y'all, of course, couldn't hear me. So when y'all were telling me to do things, I would do it, but y'all couldn't hear me.
Oh, okay. So you was probably calling in, and we couldn't get to you. Okay, I got you, Will.
Yeah. So first of all, I just wanted to call in and show you some love, man, let you know I'm proud of you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I'm proud
of what you do. You know, you're my spiritual brother. You know, I always hit you up when I, I need another prayer partner and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. So, you know, I just want to let you know, man, I see you doing big things, man. Just keep it going, you know?
I'm trying, man. I'm having fun, man. God's giving me opportunities to be fun. Anybody who thinks you can't be a Christian and have fun, somebody's telling you a lie, man, because Jesus is not born,
man.
And Jesus is not born, and he's not dull, man. You can have a lot of funny.
I had the most fun. You know, people think, yo, I have a lot of fun out in the world. That's true. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of fun out in the world, but I have the best time being a Christian and, like, turning my life back over to Christ, man.
That's great.
But I agree with a lot. Man, I actually agree a lot with both of y'all. You know, both of y'all are saying politically. You know what I'm saying? I feel that a lot of his policies, I do feel that, because I remember when his two years was up, he got elected and they lost the Congress. And a lot of the Tea Party people and a lot of the Republicans ran on the undoing what Obama did. They ran on that ticket. So a lot of them, a lot of their focus and their energy when they got into office came to undoing the things that he tried to do.
Right.
I do know that's true. That's a fact. One thing that hurt him was when he got in office, his main focus was the health care thing. He concentrated most of his energy on that, and he kind of put the economy on the back burner.
Absolutely, I believe that.
You know, he put the economy on the back burner. So that hurt him some. You know, it hurt him a lot. Hurt him with time.
Right.
Because you only have 4 years. Seems like a long time, but it's not.
No,
and
it goes
by fast. So he spent a lot of time with the healthcare, and then a lot of people said that he was trying to be too bipartisan. You know, he's like wanting to include people in the Republicans in on this and on that, and to a certain degree, whether you're a Republican or whether you're a Democrat, you can be bipartisan to a certain degree, but if you have a Republican in president and a Democratic Congress, they're not going to push your agenda.
Right.
So if you're going to try to be so bipartisan, they're not going to push your agenda.
Exactly.
You're, as they say, excuse my friend, pissing in the wind. They're not going to do that.
Right.
So you're trying to reach across the aisle too much. You do it to a certain degree, but then if you have the Congress that you have in, do what you think is best, and you live and die with that decision.
Right.
You know, he promised he was going to be bipartisan, and I think he went overboard, and he wound up spinning his wheels for 2 years. And now people are saying, look, I need to see some improvement.
Right.
You know, it's small improvement. I even heard Mitt Romney comment on the improvement in the economy, but it's small. But for him, for a Republican to even comment on a improvement in the economy from a Democratic president means there has to be some type of improvement there. I don't even mention it.
Yeah,
but the improvement,
Welton, doesn't equate to what was spent and what was and the money that they threw
at. Totally agree.
And that's the problem. If he hadn't spent the $787 billion, I think it would have been different. I also do agree with your point about if he had spent his, that's why I have an argument with a lot of my friends about, you know, they say, well, you know, the Republicans won't let him do anything. And I said, yeah, but what you forget is the first 2 years, y'all had all the cards. You do whatever the hell, you pass whatever the hell you wanted to pass. And y'all decided to spend most of that time. Right, you decide to spend that on a healthcare bill, which this is something that I told my mother. I just tell you something I told my mother, and then I'm gonna let you get back to your point. But the thing that I told my mother is, I said, see, here's the difference, and I'm gonna tell you. I said, black folks don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna support Obama anyway, no matter what, because this is the first black president. And that's how they look. But I said the difference is white folks don't look at it like that. They judge things based on their wallet.
I've been saying the same thing, Matt. I've been saying the same thing.
They look at their wallet. They look at the things that we tend not to. See, what we do is we think of all, if you don't hit, here's my point, and a lot of black folks going to get mad at me, but I'm going to say it this way.
We don't care
what Obama does. We don't care really what goes on. We're the biggest group of people who don't watch really political television. We probably watch political more in these last 4 years, political television in these last 4 years than any other time. And we don't pay attention to a whole lot, okay? The second thing is that the problem with us too is that we tend to sit and say, well, you know, Obama did this and Obama did that. But see, we don't care what Obama does. As long as Obama doesn't mess with that, doesn't change anything in what we get every 2 weeks. See, we think short-sighted. If you don't mess with my check for 2 weeks, I don't care what you do. I'm not worried about it. I'm going to still make it. I still got my same money. I'm good with that. See, we all deal with payments. See, white folks are dealing with legacy. What am I passing on to my kids? My retirement, my vacations, what do I have to go to Martha's Vineyard? What do I care about doing these other things? They care about the big picture and their wallet. We only care about our paycheck. And if it don't affect the paycheck, we don't care.
You know what, Matt?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
No, say what you're going to say, Jerry.
You actually believe that as a whole, black people think like that. I can't believe you said that.
I won't say black people as a whole, but I know a lot of let me rephrase that. The black people that I know don't care about the improvement in the economy as much as the white folks do, because we only care. Okay, let me ask you this. I got people who are still talking about going, having parties every week, going out every weekend, doing this stuff. I'm talking about 20 and 30 year olds. I'm talking about 30, 35 year olds who they support Obama no matter what. They don't care. There are people who are on welfare who don't care. They don't care whether they get a job or not. They're getting a check and a food stamp. It's the truth. They don't. And there's some that are like that.
Hey Jerry.
What's up?
Hey, I was, and this is a little bit to subject, but it's a little bit off kilter, but it goes to kind of the thought process. Just like, for instance, and of course, we're not talking about all black people, of course, you know.
Yeah, because I shouldn't have said all black people, but I'm just saying from my experience, from the black folks that I'm around, they don't care about that stuff. If you don't mess with my 2 week check, I don't care what you do.
But they don't care about
the economy. They don't care about the national debt. All I care about is me and mine. My little world right here, that's what I care about. White folks don't do that. White folks look at what am I going to leave my kids and things like that. They look at the bigger picture.
I understand what you're saying, but what happens to the economy, what Obama does with the economy and whatever happens with the economy or unemployment or employment, has to do with your check. Has to do with your kids.
But if I'm, but here's what I'm saying. But Jerry, let me ask you a question. Would I give a rat's behind about the economy, about anything, if I'm getting food stamps, I'm getting a check, or let's say I'm working a job and I got my money and I'm good. All I'm thinking about is getting through this week, what I got to do in my life, and partying or having some fun on the weekends. I don't care about the economy. I'm not sitting looking at the clock and saying how much debt we got in this country. Come on, man. There's a lot of people out here who don't care. If it don't directly affect my life, if it don't directly affect what I'm doing, in a real way every day, they don't care. You think the people who are getting food stamps, who've been living on food stamps and checks, who are able-bodied, who don't, you really think they care about the debt and all the stuff in there? No, all they care about is let me get my check, get my stuff, and go do what I got to do, and I ain't got to go to work today. And what am I going to do? I'm just saying there are a lot of poor folks out here that do care, but what I'm trying to say is basically there's a difference. A lot of black folks don't care about the debt. They don't look at the debt clock. They don't care about how in debt we are. They don't care about the future. All they care about is right now. me and mine's what's going on in my life. That's what they care about. White folks don't look at it like that. They're not short-sighted. They look at it as, what am I going to leave my grandkids? What about my retirement? What about they save money? They go on vacation. They ain't thinking about that. That's all I'm saying. That's why he's in trouble.
Well, listen to what you just said. What you just said, you gave two economical climates.
Mm-hmm.
You gave
mm-hmm.
one that's collecting food stamps or is on public
mm-hmm.
assistance
mm-hmm.
versus someone that's got a stable job enough to go on a vacation,
right.
a stable enough job to have some type of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two different perspectives because because you're looking at two different economical climates, one
right.
And you classify them, one as being
right.
white and the other one's being black. So
right.
the black person, because of what they're involved in, your scenario, what they're involved you're involved in is the black
or
person
income.
who is in survival mode because of the fact
mm-hmm.
that they're not making as much money as this person who can go on vacation,
absolutely.
Who can has a retirement a package or something like that. So
absolutely.
That, you got two different perspectives because of
mm-hmm.
two different economical clients.
Hey, Jerry and Mac, I believe that it's a mentality because
right.
What Mac is saying, that it's brothers and sisters who think like that. That have a 9-to-5 job, but never
right.
had food stamps. Every 2 weeks I get my check. These people live it check to check.
Right.
But they figure I got a nine to five. I get a little something in my 401k. But they aren't necessarily concentrating on the national. They're not looking at the national debt. They're not looking
exactly.
at okay, will there be Social Security
right.
when I get a certain age, or will
right.
this and that.
It's a mentality.
A lot of these people, like you said, a lot of white people think about a lineage that they live. I mean, it's a mentality.
Right.
Like, I was talking with some people the other day. A lot of brothers and sisters in the community, if they can't get a job within 20 miles of their home, they said, you know, they get discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
White people. A lot of white people go look for it. They'll live in D.C. and if there's a job that comes up in Seattle, they'll go to Seattle. They'll go to California. They'll go to Arizona. But a lot of our brothers and sisters won't leave. Go with my mama here, my sister, all my cousins here. I won't leave them. You know, I'm looking for a job, though, but I don't want to go. A lot of our brothers and sisters won't expand and go. Look, go live your dreams. You might not be able to live your dream a couple of blocks from the house. You might not be able to live that dream
right.
in D.C. You might not be able to live that dream in Richmond. You might have a better opportunity in Florida for you. Maybe a better opportunity, but that's nothing for a lot of white people. That's nothing for them to leave. You know, a lot of people scared to go two miles away from mama and,
right.
and cousin and stuff
yeah.
like that. That's a mentality. That's a certain mentality.
Right. That's what I kind of said it wrong, and he's kind of saying it right, is that I didn't say the mentality. It's just the mentality that they don't. What I'm trying to say is that the people who are really going to count in this vote, the independents, the white people, the people that are pissed off, and black folks too, but the black folks who are mostly mad are those who have high incomes, who are college educated, who are really into politics, and who have enough money to look at the future and leave something for their kids. But those who don't tend to not care. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying we don't – sometimes it tends to we don't care about – the debt. We don't care about those things outside of our outside of me and minds and our own world. That's what I was trying to say, Jerry. I'm not saying that when you say people think about that, yeah, they do. There's a mentality. They don't think about anybody else. All they're not thinking about what happens when my kids grow up. Let me start taking care of that now. They're thinking about immediate stuff. I'm trying to get through and find out how I'm going to have enough money to you know, go buy that new car, buy that new TV
I can honestly say at one time I thought that way. When I was younger,
right.
you know, I had a decent little job. You
right.
know, I was like, I got a job, man. You know, I would play a little ball overseas, and then I'd come back and work. I'm like,
right.
look, I got a little job. I got a decent job. You know, I'm doing all right for myself, you know, party here and there. I really wasn't thinking long term. I really wasn't paying attention, you know, to the NASDAQ. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't looking at a lot of long term things. And I stopped the company that I keep. I stopped hanging around those type of people. I started hanging around brothers and sisters that was expanding their minds and looking to do more. You know, not that it ain't brothers and sisters doing it. We just have to teach the ones that aren't, and we have to surround ourselves. Birds of a feather flock together. You know, I started surrounding myself with people that were wanted to be prosperous, that had dreams, and that were prosperous.
Exactly.
And you know, I do well for myself. I ain't rich, but I'm lost.
No.
You know, I had to graduate from that. I had to graduate mentally from that. You know.
And that's my only thing. Only thing I'm just trying to say that, and my point to what I was saying was that, is that when you were saying that, I was saying that what I was trying to make my point is that we don't really care. We're too loyal to a guy because he's black and he's the president. We're caught up in the whole, it's cool, he's the president, I love him, we're going to support him, no matter what.
Right.
And I mean, I'm okay with that, but what I don't like is the fact that we're not really paying attention. We're just taking our information off whatever MSNBC, whatever these people are telling me, and we as black folks are not doing the research. We're not going and looking on the internet and finding out, is that really true? Is that really right? See, when somebody says something on Fox News or says something on CNN or something, it's something I need, I go look it up. It's because if you notice, most of the time when they put information out, what do? They put on there where the source was. I go look up the source and go see if it's right. But a lot of us don't. And I'm just thinking that the danger in us is that we think that the problem that gets me is that we think that it's okay to support him, and we're really supporting him, but we really don't know what he's doing. We're not coming based on facts. We're just coming based
he's
black.
That's sounding like you're calling black people ignorant.
Now you take that as ignorant, but ignorant is not a bad word. Ignorant means you don't have the proper information to make a decision, or you don't have wisdom, or you don't have it. That's what ignorant is. But see, the problem is that black people are taking that word, just like racism and just like everything else, some other words, and they said, well, there's a negative connotation to it. I'm ignorant about flying planes. So am I a bad guy because I'm ignorant of flying planes? I don't know how to fly a plane. I'm ignorant. I don't know how to do it. I got to learn. So when you use the word ignorant, Jerry, I'm going to tell you, the word ignorant is not a bad word. So am I calling black people ignorant? Those who don't do their research and support the president, but you don't have any facts or figures to back up what your support is, and you're supporting them just because you're black, guess what? You're ignorant. You don't know what you're talking about. You got to get your information. If you don't know the information, you're ignorant.
I'm playing devil's advocate here.
I know.
That's why I put that out there.
No, I like that because I like that because that's one of those words that people use.
That's
some
fighting words right there, man.
Right. You're calling black people ignorant. I'm like, dude, get the dictionary and find out what white people can be ignorant. Anybody can be ignorant.
Everyone's ignorant about something.
Right. So let me tonight my what I wanted to do on the air tonight too, but I'm not gonna have a chance to do, but I'm gonna do next show is I'm gonna read the definition. I'm gonna find the definition of racism and I'm gonna read it because there are a lot of people who are ignorant about the word racism because we're running around calling things racism that aren't, and we're saying it just because it's a white guy saying it or it's a white guy doing something, you know. For instance, I've gone into stores and walked around the store and a white person followed me. Do I think they're racist? No. Not when I've been a manager in a store and I've seen people steal, and it's white and black, I'm going to follow whoever. And if I think you, and if I profile you as a thief or I think you look suspicious, I'm going to follow you.
Well, my question is this. Is he following you because you think you may be a thief, or is he following you because he's got a preset determination in his mind that this black person is trying to rob me, and I'm going to follow him to make sure he doesn't.
I'm gonna make some more people mad with this. You know what? Honestly, I could care less why he's following me. You know why? You want to know why?
Because you got money.
Wilton, you want to know why?
Because
I'm not going to steal. So what do I care? I'm not going to steal. I don't care.
But
I'm sorry, Jerry.
But you know, we got 60 seconds left in the show. I wish we could go a little further.
I know.
Max,
we'll
you want to close
next week. We're definitely going to put this on. We'll be back next week. All the people that's listening, we'll be back next week. We're going to talk about that. But
hey,
you know,
can I give you? I'll give you the sociology version of racism, because that version of racism is totally different. You may know it, but it's totally different from what people use on a day to day basis. Too.
I give you that.
But
the only, I only say this, the only way we can tell if somebody's racist or whatever is by your actions or by your words. And until you say something or do something, I'm just assuming. And even by your actions don't mean, you don't know. So I'm not going to call anything what it is, because there's going to be a day I'm going to say something, I'm going to do something, and somebody's going to say you're racist, and I won't be racist.
Yeah.
Because you assume it. So I say it's got to be both ways. But, you know, Jerry, I know we got to go, but I'm just saying, all I say to you is this. I don't worry about who follow me. I don't worry about what people think about me, whether they think I'm black, white, I'm going to steal them, I'm going to rape them, I'm walking down the street, don't want to talk. I don't care. Because you know why? It's the same reason why I don't get mad at the police when they stop me. I'm not doing nothing wrong, so what I got to worry about him for?
Yeah.
He ain't going to write me a ticket for just being black. Till that day happen, I got a problem then. But as long as I walk around being angry, being mad about it, it just doesn't do any good. But anyway, let's get out of here today, Jerry. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you next week, and we are out of here.
All right, much love.
Thank you, man. Thanks, Will.
All right, much blessings, man.
All right, brother.
Brother.